Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Retro Rankings podcast, presented by Potation Rotation. I am your host, Paul, and let me tell you something. Today, I am drinking just a good old-fashioned Coors Light. I'm going to pop open that can. Nothing special, nothing fancy, nothing hard. Just a Coors Light, only because it's like 11:30 in the morning still. So, but it's 12 o'clock somewhere, even if that's a half an hour away from where I'm at right now as I record this. All right. So today I thought I would do an episode that is outside of the realm of retro gaming. Hey, Todd, they're not all going to be retro related. They're sometimes not all going to be video game related either. But so far, I've touched on retro gaming or retro moments. You got to know me a little bit more personally on my last episode. And today I thought I would do something a little bit different again, and kind of focus on games that have come out so far in 2021, January through June. Not every game. Clearly, not every game. It's not a top 500 list. I'm not ranking all game releases from 500 to 1 or however many games have been out. I've certainly not had enough time to play all those games. However, a very fine fraction of those games I have played. And I decided that of the games that I have picked up in 2021, I would rank the top 7 games that I have enjoyed. So that's where this episode's going to be going. Has there been anything else interesting that I can talk about until I get to the rankings section of the podcast? That's what you're all here for. But yeah, I have been extremely busy this summer with COVID wearing off, I suppose you could say. It's kind of taken a turn again, though, recently. I know that that there's some concerts, some groups, some bands that are starting to cancel their shows again because of COVID-related issues. I know that there's some events around the United States, smaller events that are being canceled. I also heard that for the first time in about 3 months recently, some MLB games have been postponed because of COVID-related issues. So the problem with that is, and I'm not going to get into politics, I'm not going to get into the science of things, but I mean, it's pretty simple. We needed upwards of 75-80% total immunization in order for this to be effective, in order to beat the virus, and we're just above 50. So you have the people that are fully immunized at just above 50. You've got some people that are half immunized. And I've seen some people on YouTube that talk about, oh, I'm getting my first shot, and then they never got their second one. And then they're going out and about because the rules state right now that masks are optional as long as you're fully immunized. But there's the people that are half immunized or not immunized at all that are just going along with things. I only see maybe a handful of people in any type of public scenario still wearing masks. And if only a little over 50% of people are fully immunized, you know something's wrong. So for those of you who are immunized, congratulations. Good for you. You went about it the right way. And you are about half of the people that want to see us getting back on track here. Unfortunately, there's others that don't see it the same way for whatever reason that they have. conspiracy theories, maybe? I'm sure. Conspiracy theories, politics, not believing in science, the earth is flat, that kind of shit all plays a role into why there's people that just refuse to do it. However, what I will say is that I have, and like you, if you are fully immunized, have been going out without a mask because I'm good. I'm protected. And screw those people, I guess, that are going to get COVID, especially this Delta variant that's out. That is the number one reported COVID type right now of case. So the Delta variant, it's stronger, it's faster, it's deadlier, supposedly. And if people aren't getting vaccinated, we're going to go right back into the shithole for like another year. Hopefully not that long. If people get their shit together and realize that they done fucked up by not getting vaccinated, then maybe it won't last a whole nother year. I definitely can't look forward to some more time being holed up either in a house or at work and not able to do much of anything. I'm going to take another sip because I'm a little parched. Anyway, so me being vaccinated, I have been going out. Did make a trip out to Colorado about a month ago. And it was fine. Like nothing ever happened. Nary a mask in sight. There was one place I think I went to that actually had a sign. Most places did not have signs. One place did have a sign that stated that the masks were optional if you were vaccinated. Every other place I went to in the 6 days I was there, no masks. Employees, no masks. So that was what was going on out there, only to find on the way back that Colorado is a top 5 state hotspot for the Delta variant. And I'm like, well, it doesn't surprise me from what I just saw, because I'm pretty sure with only about half of Americans being fully vaccinated, I can guarantee you that most of the people that I came into contact with out there probably were not vaccinated, or at least half vaccinated. So anyway, I had fun out there. Family went out there. It was a good time. Stopped and picked up. Like I said on my last podcast, I was out of the Breckenridge single barrel whiskey. I did pick up another bottle of that sweet ass bourbon gold. And it is sitting currently in my kitchen waiting to be popped open for that special, special celebration. I also tried some other new flavors of things out there. Couldn't bring back much of anything. I brought that back, plus a bottle of espresso-flavored vodka for my mother, who enjoys that flavored vodka very much so. And then I came back, worked for a few days. There was a weekend, did some rotation-related things. And then we sent the kids off to camp, and I'm like, you know what? With my new job, I can pretty much work wherever I want. So I asked my boss if I could just go ahead and take my laptop up north with me. And me and the missus and the dog went up to Door County for a few days. So, and it's pretty much the same situation up there. Only every place has signs for optional masks. And I saw a little bit more mask wearing up there than I did in Colorado. And Door County is a huge tourist trap here in Wisconsin, outside of Wisconsin Dells. That's a big one. It's pretty much smack dab in the center of the state, maybe a little bit south of the center. But Door County is up in the quote-unquote thumb of Wisconsin. And it's like the Cape Cod of the Midwest. So a lot of people from Illinois. It's pretty much like Illinois part two, or Illinois Junior. A lot of people from Illinois, in fact, a lot of people from Illinois just don't like their state because they come up to Wisconsin and pretty much live here part-time. So between Lake Geneva, Wisconsin Dells, the Northwoods, Door County, they're all over the place. They just, there's nothing, Illinois sucks. Yeah, you got legal weed down there. Otherwise, it sucks. It's crowded, traffic sucks, the drivers suck, and the drivers that suck come up here, and then they suck driving on our roads. But they pretty much live in Wisconsin part-time, and so Door County and a lot of the real estate, Door County is not heavily populated as far as permanent residents go. It swells up immensely between like April and May through the end of October, especially this time of year in the middle of the summer. It's like, I don't know what the population increases by, but a lot of the condos and timeshares and these, you know, we want to, like, some, there's like even like cabins and camping spaces and stuff. All that kind of shit is usually owned by like Illinois people, and they'll, you know, reside at those spots for X amount of days out of the year, and then they'll pretty much rent them out the rest of the year. And that also causes a severe housing shortage, by the way, up there for people that want to work up there. You know, I didn't see that much of a problem as far as employment goes. Everywhere we went, it pretty much seemed to be well staffed for the crowds that were up there. So that's not a problem. But there are people that work up there. There are people that actually do internships up there, people that just work up there during the summer that have no place to live. It's almost like taking Colorado and smacking it into one small area of the state of Wisconsin, because Colorado's got that same issue, housing shortages for workers. And it's like that up in Door County, and it kind of sucks. But I'm getting off topic here. I'm just rambling away here. So that's what we did. We went to Door County, which was actually the third time in Door County. Second time. I don't remember. No, third time this year. No, second.
Oh, come on. We're staying. We're going. We're staying. We're going. Make up your mind.
I've been on like four trips since October last year. So it's starting to become all blur. And I'm going back to Colorado for work in September. But yeah, so I tried to work for the most part during the day. When I was up in Door County, had some Wi-Fi issues second to last day. And I actually had to work in the motel office. But I got done what I needed to get done and ate where I wanted to eat, saw what I wanted to see. And the dog was pretty much well-behaved, which was a pretty good surprise, actually. We kind of thought he'd be a little dick, but he wasn't, so... So that's what I've been up to so far this summer, as I get into an episode where I talk about what I've been playing so far this year as far as new games go. So, spoiler alert. Since these games are recent as of this year, if you have not played any of them and are looking to play some of them, I'm not going to get into a lot of spoilery detail or territory with these. It's going to be just basic. I'm going to let you know about the game, going to let you know my thoughts on it, kind of be done with it, move along. But if you don't want to hear anything, as soon as I announce a game, just fast forward. I don't know. Good luck with that. But anyway, here are my top 7 games of 2021 so far. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time. Kind of have a checkered history with the Crash Bandicoot series, which I'll get into in a minute. But I honestly am surprised myself that as I went through and wrote down the list of all the games that I've purchased physically or downloaded digitally and went through, that this just made my list. But let's talk about Crash Bandicoot 4. It's About Time. It is a game that actually, it came out. So here's the thing. For me, it's a 2021 game because it wasn't released for the Switch until March 12th, 2021. And I'm going to tell you why I waited in a minute. Okay. So it is, for me, a 2021 release for that platform. However, it came out, I think, like in October, I believe, of 2020. It was developed by Toys for Bob and published by Activision. The game is the 8th main installment in the Crash Bandicoot series and a retcon of the games that originally followed Crash Bandicoot Warped. The game story follows Crash Bandicoot and his sister Coco, aided by the former enemy Dingledile, and an alternate dimension counterpart of Crash's old girlfriend Tawna, as they recover the all-powerful quantum masks in a bid to prevent Dr. Neo Cortex and Dr. Nefarious Tropy from taking over the multiverse. The game added new elements to the traditional gameplay of the series, including the use of powers provided by the quantum masks, which can alter levels and provide means to traverse or overcome obstacles. It also includes additional game modes for replaying levels and the ability to control 5 characters in the game, 3 of whom, Tawna, Dingledile, and Cortex, have their own unique gameplay and levels. So here's the thing. I was never a Crash Bandicoot guy. Okay. In fact, if you've listened to the podcast before, anything on my Potation Rotation YouTube channels, I have said at least once, maybe twice, I'm pretty sure 3 times, I never started out owning a PlayStation when it came out. I had a friend that had the PlayStation. And because he had the PlayStation, he had games that I was first introduced to there. Like, I never bought PlayStation games because I didn't have a PlayStation myself. So, like, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, for example, or Final Fantasy VII. And Crash Bandicoot was one of them. So he would get Crash Bandicoot, and I'd come over there, and I'd play it. And, hey, you know, it's fun, but it was fucking hard, too. And so eventually, when I did have a PlayStation, Crash Bandicoot is a game that I picked up, and I picked up its sequel and never played another Crash Bandicoot since. I never finished a Crash Bandicoot game, as far as at the time, Crash Bandicoot 1 and Crash and the sequel. Never finished them, so I definitely never 100%ed them. It's kind of like a love-hate thing. So not even love, a like-hate. I like Crash Bandicoot. I want to like it, but they can be very rage-inducing games. And anybody that's played Crash Bandicoot knows that and could probably appreciate that, unless you think you're some kind of hard ass who is like, they're freaking cakewalks. Good for you. I guess you've got more talent in your little pinky than I do my entire body. So anyway, that's why I waited to pick up Crash Bandicoot 4, because I was not anywhere near excited when it came out. I thought it was cool that it when it was announced, I'm like, oh, they're getting back to their, it looks like they're getting back to their roots. Looks like it's kind of like when that Sonic game came out, and it was kind of like the 2D, like getting back to, you know, classic Sonic. It looks like it was getting back to classic Crash, but I didn't love Crash Bandicoot enough to pick it up then. So that's why when it came out for the Switch, I'm like, okay, I'll finally pick it up. Kind of like how I waited for the Spyro trilogy. Not completely in love with Spyro, but when it came out for the Switch, I ended up picking it up, and I ended up enjoying the Spyro games. I played through them. So, Crash Bandicoot 4. I played through it. I did not 100% it. Why? Because, fuck it. I don't like being tested like that. I don't like rage quitting. I don't like getting that frustrated. And that is the type of game that's going to frustrate you. And especially when you finish the game and you go through, and this is just from what I heard, you go through like this different mode and you finish the game and there's like further completing it. The true 100% is replaying it. And in collecting everything is apparently one of the worst decisions you can do for your brain. It's my understanding. And just playing the game from start to finish and not going out of my way to collect things, but you know, if there was something like, okay, I'm going to give it a shot, or I'm going to, like, it was enough trials and tribulations for me to be like, yeah, fuck it. There's no way I'm going to completely 100% this game as it should be for the definition of 100% in that game goes. But anyway, there is not a whole lot more I could say about this game. I mean, then again, it is only at number 7. It's a crash game. It's a good game. It's not a bad game. It does feel kind of old school and classic and kind of brought into, you know, the 2020s, the 21st century. Crash Bandicoot's been in the 21st century before. So, but it's a favorable platforming game. It's not bad. I think that it's, you know, one of the, for what they did with it, it was a good new idea. It was very well integrated into the challenge and flow of things. The enemies are really good. The level designs are really good. And Crash Bandicoot's movements, his movesets, the way he plays and controls is very well blended together. So, you know, it's, there's some other platformers that are coming up on my list. It obviously is not any of those. But, you know, it's a good game nonetheless. So I would recommend that if you can get your hands on Crash Bandicoot. I'm going to recommend any of these games, really. I mean, they're on my list. So I can't have something on my list and say I don't recommend it. But, you know, if you're a fan of Crash Bandicoot, you're going to like Crash Bandicoot 4 if you haven't played it yet. And if you're not, you know, pick it up, give it a shot. Maybe you'll end up enjoying it and going back and playing some of the older titles. So Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, is my number 7 game so far of 2021. All right, so now I'm going to take a drink. I haven't had a drink since I was rambling about COVID and my vacations. Oh, yeah. So the thing about Coors Light is, I think the Coors Light, the light version of Coors, I think that's brewed like in multiple, is it Miller Coors? Miller Coors, Molson, whatever the fuck all that shit is. They're plants. I think it's brewed everywhere, the Coors Light. So like this Coors Light I'm drinking could have been brewed right here in Milwaukee. Could have also been brewed in Golden. Could have been brewed in Texas, California. I don't know. But the Coors Banquet, which is actually my favorite Coors. And there's like a new Coors. I think it's called Coors Pure. I'm going to try that. Might do a review on that once I can get to the store and see if they've got it. But Coors Banquet is actually still the only one that's brewed in Golden. And I prefer that, but I need a light because it's still, well, what are we at now? It's almost noon. It's almost noon as I record this, but anyway. All right, I took like three sips. We are going to get into now.
Six.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, complete edition. So, I had this game back when it was a download on the 360. And again, like I said, I'm talking about Crash 4. If you listen to this podcast or my Potation Rotation YouTube videos, I've said once, twice, maybe even three times that I had an Xbox 360 and I had it twice because I never played it that much. So I had the Xbox 360 the first time, didn't play it much, sold it. And then the special edition Star Wars R2-D2 came out and it was looked cool as shit. So I bought that one. I had it for a while and the beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, beeps were cool and everything, but I barely played it. However, because I, at that point I was a PlayStation guy. I jumped from Xbox to PlayStation and now it's kind of gone back the other way. I'm kind of an Xbox guy once again because PlayStation's just been a big disappointment so far this year. Anyway, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, is a side-scrolling beat-em-up game developed by Ubisoft Montreal and Ubisoft Chengdu and published by Ubisoft based on the Scott Pilgrim series of Oni Press graphic novels by Brian Lee O'Malley and tying in the release with the film of the same name. As I said before, the game was originally released digitally for the Xbox 360 and also for the PS3. In August 2010, before being delisted 4 years later. The updated re-release, which is what we're talking about now, was released back in January, a whole 6 months ago, 7 months ago, 6 or 7 months ago. So anyway, when I got rid of my Xbox 360, I lost the game. Obviously, by the time that I had found out it was even digitally available for the PS3, it had already been delisted. So, and it wouldn't have mattered because then I moved from the PS3 to the PS4 and it would have been gone anyway. So I actually hadn't had this game probably in about a good solid 9 years. But the game itself loosely follows the story of the graphic novels, and up to four players can play as Scott Pilgrim, Ramona Flowers, Kim Pine, or Steven Stills, along with unlockable character Nega Scott, and the downloadable characters Knives Chow and Wallace Wells. If you have the complete edition, they're there for you, who must battle through seven levels in order to defeat Ramona's seven evil exes. Characters have their own individual movesets, which can be expanded upon by gaining enough experience, and are also available to use weapons. Each player has heart points and guts points, the latter of which can revive players if they are knocked out, or must be used to perform special moves, such as summoning Knives Chow or the unlockable assist character Mr. Chow. Defeating enemies earns coins, which can be spent on shops to purchase items that can replenish health or boost stats. Certain items can be taken to go to be automatically used when the player runs out of health. Players can also enter subspace areas, which act as bonus areas, where extra coins can be earned. During cooperative play, players can revive fallen comrades at the cost of some money, give each other health or money, and simultaneously taunt for a combined attack. Various cheat codes unlock extra features, such as a sound test, boss rush, survival horror mode. Will that be part of the Portoroto player's pro tip of the day? Well, we'll see. Coming up at the end of the episode, it's the return. It's the return of that. So, anyway, the re-release, the complete edition. It's the remaster of the game, including, like I said, the DLC packs. So anything that was downloadable back then that you had to pay a little bit extra for were all complete in this game. It was released for Windows, Switch, PS4, Xbox One, Luna, Stadia, pretty much everything. And it was revealed that Limited Run's game would release a physical version of the game alongside several special edition releases with physical bonus copies. And that happens to be one that I got. And if you go to Potation Rotation on YouTube, the reviews channel, I think it was on the reviews channel, or did I split the reviews channel off by then? You'll have to go find out. You'll have to go look at the Potation Rotation channels. I did a review on the physical copy from Limited Run Games. It was the first time and the only time so far from Limited Run Games where I pre-ordered something and it came within like about a month. Like, I was like pleasantly shocked. So anyway, the game kind of features some RPG style, you know, elements to it, along with the side scrolling and the 16-bit look of it, the classic retro look. Now, yeah, I guess, I mean, this game has technically been around for, you know, like 11 years, so I can't say that it's like new and there's like spoilery territory. I mean, if you haven't played it by now, if you didn't play it back then before it was delisted, or if you still have a PS3 or an Xbox 360 and you've got it on there, you know, I'm getting carried away here, but basically what I'm trying to say is if you haven't played it, like, you need to play this game. It's fantastic. And if you have played it and you have it sitting on an old console and you haven't played it in a while, get back in there and play it again. It's a good game and it's got a really good soundtrack. I mean, there's not a lot of games that, there's not a lot of games for me where music makes that much of a difference. Legend of Zelda, love the music. I mean, the music makes that series. The Mario games, the music is starting to get a little bit better. The Odyssey soundtrack was probably the best Mario music in decades. There's not a lot of games where a soundtrack is like really good. This is one to me that it really is. It's like music you would hear in an NES game, but like jacked up. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. I mean, it's so good that you can actually get download the soundtrack for it. And the physical release that I've got actually has the option of me getting that soundtrack digitally. I still haven't downloaded it yet, though. But it's good. It's a good soundtrack. It's a good game. It received nominations in 2010 for like best downloaded game or something like that. And it won best adapted video game at the Spike Video Game Awards. It's a solid RPG. It's a side-scrolling platforming game with some RPG elements. And it does it very, very well. So if you haven't played it, get out there and play it. It's there for you to play it. I don't think there's no sign of it. Nobody's talking that it's going to go away this time. But, I mean, you never know. It might, but it's there now. Go get it. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, complete edition. Go out there and get it now. Number 6 on my list, 2021. So, I need another drink. Anyway, yeah, that's Scott Pilgrim. And it's, you know what? I just want to say something. You know, I'm the type of guy that if I can take it on the go, I'm going to take it on the go. That's why sometimes I'll wait for a Switch release. Or if it's going to be a game that I want to experience on the TV, then I won't. I'll get a PlayStation or an Xbox version of that game because I know it's going to be best suited for that type of experience as far as the sound and the picture quality and sitting back with a controller in my hand and going to town. However, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, is one of the best games you can take on the go and play. I mean, if you're going to play it, get it for the Switch or download it on your Xbox and play it on your mobile through the Xbox app on your phone. All right. Good old Coors Light. Most people would say it tastes like piss water, but I say fuck most people.
5.
Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. Now, I want to just say one thing before I get into, you know what? I don't. Let's just focus on what's important here. Bowser's Fury. Bowser's Fury is a 2021 platform game bundled in with the Nintendo Switch re-release of Super Mario 3D World. The player controls Mario through a 3D cat-themed open world to complete challenges and collect cat shines to dispel a black sludge from Lake Lapcat and free Bowser from its control. At irregular intervals, Bowser turns the world into an apocalyptic night to rain fire on Mario and alter the environment. Its gameplay is based on 3D World, while also adapting elements introduced in Super Mario Odyssey. The bundled release was reported to be the best-selling video game of February 2021 in the United States. So that's what's important here. Super Mario 3D World, don't get me wrong, it's a great game. It really is. It's fun to play, except if you're trying to 100% it. I will be brutally honest. As a completionist of Mario games, Zelda games, like I've said before, games that I, especially series that I thoroughly enjoy, I want to get the most bang for my buck, I will certainly 100% it. If it's 200% it, I will 200% it. Super Mario 3D World is the only Super Mario title that I will not complete 100%. I didn't get to that point of 100%ing it the first time it came out. I got a little bit farther, and because the levels at the end that you keep unlocking, they get harder, and I mean they are brutal. They are almost, to me, almost unfair how hard they are in this game. I've had some rage-inducing moments trying to complete a Mario game. As we all know, those last few levels to collect or unlock whatever you're trying to do can be challenging. But I got a little bit farther in the re-release trying to 100% it. I said, I told myself I was going to do it. This is it. I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to 100% it. I got a little bit farther. I got to the point where I was like, fuck it. I am dying way too much, way more often than I need to. It got to the point where I'm going back in levels. I'm trying to spam one-ups, and I'm trying to get certain costumes and then going all the way back to the level I'm trying to complete, only to never be able to finish it. So I was like, fuck it. I have other games to move on to. I am never, ever going to 100% Super Mario 3D World. It gets diabolically hard. However, the gem here, and for as short of a campaign it is, even if you're 100%ing it, as short as it is, Bowser's Fury is phenomenal. It's an open world platform game in which Mario completes challenges, collecting the cat shines, as I said. They're like tokens to free Bowser and Lake Lapcat from the controlling black sludge. It has similar gameplay as Super Mario 3D World, but it's more open world. How can I explain it? It's like Odyssey, but even Odyssey had its limitations as to what was quote unquote open. Yeah, you had vast amount of lands to cover, but they were still levels and worlds, and you still had only a certain amount of that area you can actually cover before you reach the edge or a pit or whatever the case may be. Bowser's Fury felt more like, and even though you were restricted because you can't just keep going infinitely off, you know, in a game forever, it felt more like taking Odyssey, putting 3D world elements into it, and giving it a open world Breath of the Wild style feel to it. It is, I hope, what Nintendo will do with the next Mario. Stick Mario into an open world like Breath of the Wild and let him go to these levels within this vast world instead of hopping around in a spaceship or planet to planet or a balloon, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Because even though those worlds feel vast, they're still compressed into their own units. And you have to hop along between those units in order to play those levels, those worlds. Whereas Bowser's Fury, you were dropped down and you just went. And you just completed your challenges in the different areas that were already like there. There was no loading. There was no traveling, so to speak, and something between the two or three or four, or how many levels there were in Bowser's Fury, I don't remember. But anyway, it's fantastic. That if Bowser's Fury was a full fledged Mario game, it probably would have been number two or even number one on my list. I mean, that's how good Bowser's Fury is. But because it's, you're only collecting, you're collecting 100 shines in the game, these cat shines. There's 100 of them. And you look at past Mario games where you're collecting things, you're collecting 100, 110, 120, whatever. It seems like, it seems like it's a big game. Well, it's not, because these 100 shines are really easy to collect, and they're pretty much compacted within whatever level you're playing, except for the ones that are out around the lake or the ones you have to get. Basically, you complete the game and then you have to go back in and collect the rest of them. So I think maybe it's, if you're going to 100% it, it's maybe like an 8-hour game. If you're not, it's probably about half that. So I think it took me, about 8 hours to 100% Bowser's Fury, but I'm not going to talk about much more about it. If you haven't, if you can get this game at a discount, it's worth playing just for Bowser's Fury. And you don't have to play 3D World. You have the option of going straight to Bowser's Fury. It's an option. So if you have a Switch and you did not pick up this game, you can get it at a discount. I mean, get it. If you haven't played 3D World, get it. I mean, if you haven't played 3D World at all, it's worth the price alone for 3D World. So Bowser's Fury is just icing on the cake. But if you played 3D World and you didn't get it because you played 3D World, I'm telling you, it might be worth it for you to get it to play Bowser's Fury. And Bowser's Fury lands at number 5 for me today on my list. All right, so before we get into number 4, which... It's going to be a quick one. I'm going to take another sip of my Coors Light. Or a gulp. I've been really gulping my beers lately. It's because I want to move on to the next one, but there is no next one when I do this. All right. Let's move right along here. MLB The Show 21. So here's the thing with me and MLB, the show. I haven't played an, I don't even know the last time I ever played an MLB the show was. I love baseball. It's my number one favorite sport. It's like the only sport where I can watch any game. And even if it's not a team that I follow, and pick a team and root for that team. And why, like, I can't do that with football. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan. I only watch Green Bay Packers games. I cannot watch any other football game. I'll watch the Super Bowl. I'll pick a team and watch the Super Bowl. But that's it. Hockey, Colorado Avalanche. Can't watch any other hockey. I don't like soccer. I hate basketball, though I've been watching. I did watch the finals because the Milwaukee Bucks were in the finals this year. But yeah, baseball, I can watch any and all baseball. I love baseball. However, I've not been a big fan of paying $60 to play a baseball game, a baseball video game. So I don't know when the last time I played any baseball game was, especially MLB the show. Prior to this year, it was a PlayStation exclusive. I was excited when, and it's still weird as it is, that it was going to be on the Xbox. I was like, wow, that is amazing. I was completely, and I'm sure most people were, blown away by the fact that this was going to be on a PlayStation game on the Xbox. But anyway, before I go any further, the game is a game by San Diego Studio and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment based on Major League Baseball. It was released for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5, as well as the Xbox One and Xbox Series X/S. Again, a first for the franchise, with MLB Advanced Media co-publishing digital versions on later platforms. The 16th entry in the MLB The Show franchise, it was released on April 20th, 2021. And Fernando Tatis Jr., who is the shortstop for the Padres, is on the cover of this game. Matt Vasgersian, Mark DeRosa, and Dan Plesac return as play-by-play commentators. Heidi Watney is a sideline reporter, and Alex Miniak as public address commentator in the game. New to this series is a ballpark creator feature, which gives the players the ability to change ballpark dimensions, wall height, foul territory, and other scenery options. The feature also allows players to share and download ballparks that other players have created online. It was exclusive to the 9th generation versions of the game. So, yes, I actually, believe it or not, had, I think it was it the Jackie Robinson? I can't even remember anymore. The Jackie Robinson special edition steelbook something. It was like $100 version of the game pre-ordered through Best Buy. And I was going to get the Xbox Series version of it. Because so far I kind of feel that, with one exception, that the Xbox is just, my Xbox Series X is just performing so much better than my PlayStation 5. It's quieter. It's got a nice low hum coming out of the fan. And it everything plays just smoother, it seems. So I was going to get that. And then when they announced that it was going to be on Game Pass, I canceled the pre-order. I didn't need that fancy physical. And you know what? I'm a physical collector. I like physical games. But so far this year, actually on this list, three of these games have been digital downloads. Just because I wanted them to play them like right away. You know, these games come out when I'm at work. And so I wanted to go ahead and pre-order some of these games and have it so that when I come home, they're already installed, downloaded, installed, updated, all that shit. I can just get right into it. Whereas with a physical release, especially outside of the Switch, there needs to be an installation and update, and that usually takes time. So MLB The Show 21. As soon as I got home that day, I fired that fucker up. And I'll tell you, as somebody who is a fan of baseball, I don't know why I've been ignoring baseball games all this time. It is a pretty good game. I mean, I don't have anything to compare it to. I mean, if I were to give it a ranking out of 10, I'd give it an 8. You know, I don't know. I really don't know what could make it better. I think there's a lot of controls. There's a lot of like different things that you can do. Different options, batting, pitching.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
Things that happen that I'm like, maybe that's a little too much for me, especially since I wasn't grandfathered into the series. Whereas maybe, you know, 10 games ago, options and controls would have been a little bit more easier to understand and follow. Whereas now I'm just like thrusted into all this shit. But that's just me. That's just me. So there was a little bit of a learning curve for me, some things to get used to. But I have heard that there is a... that people didn't like the Road to the Show and the franchise modes, which I was doing the Road to the Show for a while. And then I'm like, no, I'm just going to get into some actual freaking baseball games. Like the Road to the Show was taking a little too long. So, but yeah, it was and still is. And it's like one of the things that I still dive into on my phone. It's a good game to take on the go, even though it is tiny ass small on that screen. It's not the best game to take on the go, but I like just lounging around somewhere else on my phone with my little Xbox controller that I've got that my phone goes into the Razer. And it's a good game. It is. It's a solid game. I don't have anything else to compare it to. I'm just happy with it. I'm glad it came out for the Xbox. And one of these days, I'm actually gonna fire it up on my TV and play it on the big screen and probably enjoy it a little bit more. But that's all I got to say about MLB The Show 21. It was just something that was exciting for me, and it makes number 4 on my list today. All right, getting into the top 3. You know, I'm going to take three gulps. Three gulps. As we get into number 3, yeah, baseball. It took me a while to really get into baseball. I think I was like in my early 20s by the time I really started to get into baseball. And at that point, I loved it so much that I pretty much regretted dropping out of Little League. I was in Little League, and I kind of got upset at the positions that they were making me play that I didn't want to play. I don't remember what positions they made me play. I think it was in the outfield, but I wanted to play in the infield. I think that's what I remember. And I remember asking the coach about that, and like, I didn't have a say. And so I hated it and I quit. Which I think if I remember telling my parents that I didn't want to play anymore, I think they were a little upset because I'm pretty sure it cost money, but I didn't want to play anymore because I wasn't getting my way.
Oh, you make me sick, you fucking baby.
And, but see, like, I've been to Little League games, you know, recently, the past few years, and they let their players, like, do different positions. I've seen kids catch and pitch and play first base and, you know, play center field, and that wasn't happening when I was playing. They pretty much, when I was playing, at least in this specific Little League team, they gave you a position and you stuck with it. Like, there was no rotation. And so, fuck that shit. Kids got it made today. And that's good. And that's how it should be, I think, right? Like, that way you can see what strength a kid has at a certain position. And then that's eventually over time, as you get out of Little League and into, like, different, like, I don't know, like school, high school. I don't know what comes after Little League. You know, you know what position you're strongest at, or positions, you know, and that's what you focus on. And you go from there, you know, and if need be, you get to the point where you're in the minors or something, and there's some tweaks that need to be made, or they're like, oh, we want you to learn this position, you know, then you become a utility player, you know. But yeah, I end up liking baseball so much that I regret quitting Little League, because who knows? I wish I could have played professionally or even semi-professionally. Anyway, moving right along here. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. So, again, Tony Hawk. I will tell you that with Tony, when it comes to Tony Hawk, that, like I said, my friend had the PlayStation, and my friend, who was also a skateboarder, obviously had this game. There's no way he wasn't going to. Pretty sure he got it on day one. And I hung out with this friend and his other friends that were skateboarders. I was the guy that did not skateboard. I sat on the sidelines and watched them all do their shit, thrash, as they would say back in the day. And eventually I started to inline skate. However, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. I did sprain an ankle at one point, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do tricks on rollerblades. So I should have probably started out with a skateboard in retrospect before moving on to rollerblades. But anyway, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 is a skateboarding video game developed by Vicarious Visions and published by Activision. It was released for Windows, PS4, and Xbox One back in September 2020. However, there is a PS5 and Xbox Series XS version that was released in March 26, 2021. And that is the version I have, the so-called quote-unquote next-gen version. And I believe the Nintendo Switch version just came out a little over a month ago. It's a remaster of the first two games in the Tony Hawk series, which is Pro Skater from 99 and Pro Skater 2 from a year later in 2000. They're originally developed by Neversoft. It is the first major game in the series since Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, about 6 years ago, and is noted for being Vicarious Visions' final work as a subsidiary of Activision before it merged into Blizzard Entertainment in January 22nd, 2021. It has become the fastest-selling game in the franchise. It moved a million copies within the first couple weeks of its original release back in 2020. So, again, here we go. It's another game that was actually originally released for certain platforms, the last gen, so, you know, quote unquote, back in 2020. However, this is a 2021 game for me. Now, I did go out and buy it in 2020. And you can go back to Potation Rotation. And I don't know if I talked about it. I think I did some gameplay or whatever, but that was like the only time I played it. I barely picked it up after that. However, I picked up the PS5 version earlier this year, and even the PS5 version, like I can tell, it's so much better, than the PS4 version. So, for me, it's been a game that I've been playing most this year than I did when it first came out last year. So I'm kind of considering this a 2021 release for me. And if you don't know anything about Tony Hawk, actually it was Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 that I played at my friend's house that actually got me to go and finally get a PlayStation of my own. So thank you, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. There was something to be said about, basically, I looked at it as an action adventure game on a skateboard, because you went through levels, you had objectives and goals, you collected things, you racked up points. I mean, you know, and by the end of a timer being done, like whatever you just accomplished, that was it. And if you didn't 100% that level, you go back in and you get the other shit that you missed until, you know, it gets to the point where you've collected everything in that level and you can move on. I mean, at least for me. So going to my friend's house and playing it, it wasn't good enough. I had to have it myself so that I can get through the game. And so that's what got me to get a PlayStation. And if you guys don't know anything about it, I already said it's skateboarding. It's like in a third person view, and it's oriented towards, it's got like an arcade feel to it. Like I said, the goal of most of the game models have been to achieve high scores and collect objects. And you got to complete objectives to unlock levels to progress through the game. To score points, the player has to successfully perform and combine aerials, flips, grinds, lips, manuals, etc., etc.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
With successful executions, adding to the player's score. The point value of the trick is based on time maintained, degrees rotated, number of tricks performed in the sequence, performing tricks on specific landmarks on the map, the number of times the tricks have been used. I mean, the possibilities are endless. Successful tricks also add to the player's special meter, which, once full, allows for the execution of special tricks, which are worth a great deal more than normal tricks. Bails, which is when you fall off, attain no points for the attempted trick sequence, and it resets the special bar to empty. So don't bail, or else you're fucked, and you gotta do shit all over again. So, and even though this remaster, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, only covers the first two entries, it does feature tricks introduced in later games all the way up through Underground, such as reverts, spine transfers, and wall plants, as well as the abilities to perform enhanced tricks such as double flips and to switch between certain trick types such as grinds, lips, and manuals in a single sequence. However, it is possible to set the controls back to only featuring maneuvers possible in the original games. However, you do that, it's going to probably take you a little bit longer to achieve certain goals. The player can also create their own skater and skate park with the Create a Skater and Create a Park modes. The game also includes both local split screen and online multiplayer. Furthermore, the game offers a progression system which allows players to complete specific challenges to reach a higher level and thus unlock new items in the game's store. So, that's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 in a nutshell. There is some nostalgia. It is considered, the originals are considered retro at this point. So, there is that nostalgia factor. Tony Hawk, when I think about these games, I get chills. They are fantastic games. Well, the first few were pretty good. Underground was good. And that was about it as far as the Tony Hawk franchise goes. 1, 2, 3, Underground. Those are my recommendations. And Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, the remaster. If you got an next-gen console, at least get it on the PS5. I don't know if the Xbox Series version is any good, because I've never played it, but the PS5 version is fantastic, as well as the PS4 version was. I can't recommend it enough, and that is number 3 on my list today. So, getting into 1 and 2 here. Here we go. I need to start sipping. I've got probably about 3 sips left. We got 2 games left. We got the end of the podcast. And I just got a little splashback in my eye. Oh, yes. Beer in the eye. Fantastic. It's a quicker way to get drunk, too, by the way. Just so you know, if you want to get drunk super fast, just pour beer straight into your eye socket.
That is the stupidest thing I ever heard of. Jesus Christ.
2.
Resident Evil Village. So, me and Resident Evil, kind of like another love-hate thing. I owned 1 through 3. I owned 0 when it came out for the GameCube. And I played 4 at a friend's house. And the same friend, I also played a little bit, but mostly watched him play some of 5. I never played 6, never even saw anything of 6, never played 7, but I did see some things of 7 online. So Resident Evil Village, really, since finishing Resident Evil 3, Resident Evil Village is really the first Resident Evil game that I've played since then, all the way through. If you don't know, Resident Evil Village is a first-person survival horror game developed and published by Capcom. It's the sequel to Biohazard, aka Resident Evil 7, in 2017. Players control Ethan Winters, who was searching for his kidnapped daughter. After a fateful encounter with Chris Redfield, he finds himself in a village filled with mutant creatures. While Village maintains the Resident Evil series' survival horror elements, the game adapts a more action-oriented gameplay style compared to its predecessor. It also includes an online multiplayer mode. The game was announced at the PlayStation 5 reveal event in June 2020, and was released on May 7th, 2021 for Windows, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X/S, and Stadia. Resident Evil Village received generally favorable reviews, being praised for its gameplay, setting, and variety, although it received criticism for its puzzles and boss battles, as well as performance issues on the Windows version. So, let me just tell you right now, you know, as far as, I mean, it's obviously a way different game than the first 3, or even 0 for that matter, right? We'll just call them the original 4. I don't remember playing 4 that well, Resident Evil 4. I don't remember it that well. And I never actually got hands on with 5, 6, 7. So I don't have a lot more recent stuff to compare it to. I am looking for the time to go back and start 7 and play 7 and see then what kind of comparison I can make to 7. For what it's worth, I mean, I played through it, and I haven't played through a Resident Evil game. I didn't 100% it. I don't complete games like 100% games like this usually, typically. And that involves trophies. Somebody asked me once, too, do you like the trophies that you collect, you know, for the game, for any game where there's trophies? Do you consider that 100%? And I said no. I said no because not all games have trophies. Nintendo games never had trophies. Like, trophies were never part of the original development of a game with collectibles or achievements, in-game achievements. unlockables, stuff like that. So I don't count trophies and, you know, stuff like that. The achievements, if you will, that you get awarded anytime you complete something odd. Like I think in Ratchet and Clank, there was one where you play the jukebox. Like there's just a jukebox in the game. And I walked by it every time. I never stopped to play it. You play it, you get an achievement or a trophy or something like that. I don't bother with that kind of stuff. I don't consider that. I don't consider that part of completion. So when I say I didn't complete Resident Evil Village, I'm talking about like I didn't like find everything in the game and I didn't get all the achievements or trophies or whatever either. But it was good enough for me to actually, it held my attention enough for me to finish it. It was shorter than I anticipated. You know, I don't know. I mean, there is really short. I mean, Resident Evil 3 was super short. So, but I expected to be a little bit longer. And part of me is still like old school. I'm not a big first person perspective player. I do enjoy seeing my character on the screen. And I guess, I don't know how else to say it. The enemies were okay. They're like these werewolf type, they're not even zombies, these werewolf type people. But the thing is, like, they weren't scary per se. Like nothing in the game was scary, but these enemies were kind of like smart and intelligent and could come in packs and had weapons. And that was kind of frustrating. Whereas before it's like Resident Evils that I'm used to back in the day, the retro ones at this point, where, you know, like you're walking around and all of a sudden and something comes up and grabs you and you're like, fuck, you know, and then you're trying to get them off of you and stabbing them or trying to shoot them in the head. And it's changed, man. It's changed. And so it's something that was like new and fresh to me. And I was both frustrated and I enjoyed it at the same time. So it made me realize that I really, 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 really had to come up with strategies to either utilize a weapon or and my ammunition or versus melee or run away. And sometimes I would just be like, fuck it, I'm just going to stab the fucking ever living shit out of something. And it didn't always work. Sometimes I found that running away was best to do. So, but anyway, this is probably the second most recent game on my list. So I don't want to get too deep into it. I'm still waiting for my brother Keith to get to this game and finish it because I do want to have a conversation with him about it. But until then, I thoroughly enjoyed Village for what it's worth and can't wait to get back, go backwards to Biohazard and play that. And maybe that my opinion might change at that point, but as far as it stands right now, Resident Evil Village is number 2 on my list of the top 7 games of 2021 for me. All right, we're heading towards the top here, the very tippy top, we're reaching the crescendo, the ultimate point, the peak, the pinnacle of this episode.
Christ, it's about time.
But before I do, it's time to indulge in another sip of Coors Light. Maybe one more sip. I definitely can't take another sip because I like have 2 sips left. And I'm getting rather parched here. Maybe I need to start introducing water. Maybe I need to also have a glass of water. But anyway, Resident Evil. I'll tell you something though. Village is making me get back into Resident Evil games. I'm waiting for 4 to come out. That's supposed to be VR. Hopefully I can play that on the Oculus. That would be fantastic if I have that option. But yes, I'm all getting back into Resident Evil again. But let's end this podcast.
1.
Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. I have said on my brother's podcast that this for me so far has been, well, I didn't say it this way, but it's been for me the absolute best game this year so far. I'm completely taken by surprise. It is to me a pretty perfect game for the type of game that it is. So if you don't know, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart is a third-person shooter platform game developed by Insomniac and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment for just the PS5, and hopefully just the PS5. If they try to go backwards with this, they're going to fuck it something. They're going to fuck something up. I know it. They're going to fuck something up. So let's just please keep it on the PS5. It's the 16th installment in the Ratchet & Clank series, with the game serving as a follow-up to both Ratchet & Clank Into the Nexus and 2016's Ratchet & Clank, which, when I say 2016's Ratchet & Clank, it was a reimagining of the first game in the series, just so you know. Rift Apart was announced in June 2020 at the PS5 reveal event and was released on June 11th, 2021. Upon release, it received critical acclaim, with particular praise given to its visuals, combat, and technical advancements. So now here's the thing. I never played a Ratchet & Clank game in my life. kind of like Crash Bandicoot, but worse. So I kind of have this thing where, because of Crash Bandicoot, and because Crash Bandicoot wasn't Mario or Sonic or something like that, like, Sony had its struggles to try to come up with its own mascot. Crash, Ratchet, or maybe even Clank. I don't know. But because of Crash, like, I couldn't trust Sony to put out platform games that I would love to play, right? And this is, it's a, like I said, it's a third-person shooter platform game. So you got your shooting, and you got your platforming, right? And so because of Crash Bandicoot, I was like, Ratchet and Clank, eh. It's probably like a good try at a game that's probably going to be like way too hard. I'm not going to love it. Never played Ratchet and Clank. When they showed this game at the PS5 reveal event, I was like, this game looks pretty cool. It looks pretty exciting. I like the way it looks. I like the way it appears to play. And I was hoping for a launch release. However, we learned later it was not going to be a launch release. So over time, from the reveal in June 2020 all the way up for like a whole nother year, anytime new information or new footage or anything was released for Rift Apart, I actually got more excited. I'm like, wow, this game looks fantastic. So it was probably about earlier this year when I realized this is a game that I'm gonna jump in. I'm gonna try it. It looks really good. And I did pre-order it. I had it pre-ordered, but then I decided, nope, this is gonna be one of those games where I need to get the digital copy. Pre-ordered. So when I say pre-ordered, I'm usually talking physical copies. Just so you guys know, now and in the future, when I say I pre-order a game, it's it's 99.9% a physical copy. But I'm like, no, I needed the digital version because, you know, I need to then put my PS5 on standby, which I never do. I usually just turn it off, but I need to get the digital copy, pre-order it, put my PS5 on standby the day before and let it do its thing so that when I get home, I can get right into this game. I could not put this game down. I was playing this game as consistently as I would a Mario game or a Zelda game. I could do an entire episode if I was doing episodes that weren't ranking shit. I could do an entire episode talking about Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. I love this game. It is so good. It is everything that I've ever wanted in a game like this. You know, I think I said, I don't know if I said it here or on Potation Rotation on YouTube somewhere or in my brother's podcast, but you know, it could potentially be like one of my favorite. I mean, it is my favorite, one of my favorite games of all time at this point. The only thing that's not actually putting it in number one is I just think A Link to the Past is the ultimate perfect game. In my opinion, that's what this podcast is all about. This is all my opinions, y'all, you know? So I'm just letting you know what they are. You can come at me if you want. I have no problem with that, but this is my opinion. So, and yes, nostalgia is locked onto A Link to the Past, which means that it'll probably never budge from number one. This is Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart is pretty damn close. I mean, it's pretty damn close to number two. I don't know. I have to reevaluate things. I'm not sure, but just, you know, the only time that you're not actually doing anything in the game is when you're getting in your ship and you're going from one planet to another. And there's kind of like this cutscene that shows what planet you're going to with the planet's name at the bottom of the screen. And then you're at the next planet, right? But everything else outside of that is absolutely seamless. You're in a cutscene, and in most games, cutscenes end, fades to black, comes back up, gameplay. That's what I've been used to for the most part. Not all games are like that. I realize that. But for the most part, that's kind of how it works. Or there's some kind of loading sequence somewhere. Even when you're traveling from one planet to another, it's fairly quick. It's almost as if like the game never loads anything. And these cutscenes, when you're in a cutscene and then somebody's still talking to you during the cutscene, you're standing there and thinking it's still the cutscene, but it's not. Like, you can go ahead and start playing. Like, it's crazy. And the jumps, the rifts are seamless. Now, there were some hiccups. There were some well-known hiccups when this game came out. And I fell victim to a pretty big one of them. And that was early on in the game. And I, again, don't want to like say too much. And it's been patched since. But early on in the game, you're chasing a certain character, which I won't get into spoilers of who that character is or anything. Or because there's different variants, if you will. Characters that have appeared in the series prior are the same but different variants in these different parallel universes, okay? So there's a certain character I'm chasing, and there was a glitch that if you do this part of the game too early, because you have objectives, and then you have objectives that are not required, they're optional. So like I started this objective, which you had to do, and somehow the game glitched into the objective that was optional. So I completed that, the optional objective, before completing the one I was supposed to complete. When I went back to complete the one I was supposed to complete, where I'm chasing this character, then you get to like this big bolt you're supposed to be, you know, screwing into the ground to activate a lift or something like that, if I remember correctly. The bolt was locked. and I couldn't do anything with it. And then this character just stood there staring at me, waiting for me to advance this, the story part of this objective. But I couldn't. I was locked into this. And there was also no way safely back to anywhere in the level. You had to kill yourself, which you have unlimited lives, but you had to kill yourself and then restart from a certain save point. So unfortunately, I was stuck in the game. I could not advance. There was no way to advance. And I did report the bug, and Insomniac said, yes, this is one of our major bugs that everybody's reporting. Not everybody was faced with that. Unfortunately, they did not have a patch or a fix. And even if they did, I think it was, if you were going to go into it from the beginning, it would be patch and fix and you wouldn't have a problem. For me, I actually had to go back through two save files and restart that entire level, so to speak, over again, which wasn't too bad. I just had to complete one objective, find some collectibles as I planned on 100%. Like, I knew right when I started this game, I was going to 100% it. Like, within 15 minutes of playing, I'm like, I'm going to get everything I can out of this game. So I had to go back and kind of restart. And I went straight to that mission instead of doing any other mission or an optional one. So, and it worked. I was able to do it. And then I went and finished the rest of the objectives for that world, that planet, whatever. So, and then I had some other glitches. I fell through some things that I probably wasn't supposed to fall through or whatever. Nothing was ever that bad. Nothing was ever as bad as that one. But they did get some patches out, and I never had that much of a problem except for towards the end of the game, I was battling, we'll just say it's a pretty major boss. And in order at this point to 100% the game, I needed to farm some bolts. And so this enemy was really good at spamming smaller enemies. So I just went through and in order to collect all these bolts and at the same time upgrade my weapons. I needed to upgrade them as fully as I could in the first run through, the first campaign run through. I just went through every weapon and until I fully upgraded, you know, the weapon that I move on to the next one and the next one and the next one. Just killing all these enemies that this boss was spamming at me. The game crashed. I was probably like an hour in, with this technique and it crashed. So I ultimately spent, I think 3 hours that night with 1 hour completely wasted, upwards of three. I'm rounding up doing this with this boss. I'll just say it involves a boss's heart and you're kind of inside of it, you're outside the heart, but inside this room where the heart is. Okay. And he's spamming these enemies at you. If you don't have your weapons upgraded and you want to collect more bolts, this is where you do it. This is where you farm this shit. You just farm this shit until you're fully upgraded. Because everything carries over into the second campaign where the game gets a little bit harder, but everything carries over and then you can fully upgrade even your weapons even more because your weapons evolve and they transform and they become, you know, blah, blah, blah. So all that being said, some problems, yes, but overall the game was fantastic. And like Resident Evil, where I'm going to eventually play 4, 5, 6, and 7. Ratchet and Clank's going to make me go back and start from the beginning. I'm hoping, I know that none of these games, none of the past games are going to live up to this one. And that's an expectation I have to have going into it. But I'm hoping to get some enjoyment out of them. I kind of regret not giving it a shot back then, because I think I probably would have been a Ratchet & Clank fan then from game one, because you do kind of need to know how these characters have interacted in the past to understand how they're interacting now. You know, you need to know some of their history. But you know what? For me not having known, it still did a good job with me kind of understanding why the characters react and act and speak to each other now. It was fine. It was good enough. It was passable for me. So I can't speak enough. I could keep going on about Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. I'm not going to. I need to stop. Rift Apart, number one, my number one game so far of 2021. All right. Oh, man. Yeah. I honestly can't wait to, I'm sipping more beer. I just can't wait to get back, go backwards and play some Ratchet & Clank, some retro titles. Okay, so that's going to do it for my top seven list. But before we go, we got to get into, go back to having the Pota Rota Players Pro Tip of the Day.
Oh, yeah.
So what is the Pota Rota Players Pro Tip of the Day? Well, a pro tip can be anything. It can actually be a legitimate tip, or I can kind of be a dick and give us something that's useless, that really isn't much of a tip, or, you know, just not give anything at all and just be like, psych, okay, see you next time. So today is actually going to be a legitimate tip, and it involves Crash Bandicoot 4. It's about time. Now, I wanted to pick this tip because it kind of tells you like what you can do and how far you can go to achieve something that I won't do. But when you complete Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, you will unlock a triple spin move. So then, because there's more shit to do, you know, if you need to collect more shit, which I won't do, you can go back into the game, okay? And you can use this triple spin move by pressing the attack or spin button 3 times in a row while walking forward. And you have to press it when the spin animation is about to flash. And you leave like a second delay between each button press. Do not press them too quickly. So you wait for the animation about to flash, you press, you press, you press. And you can perform that triple spin move at that point. Now, furthermore, when you're talking about trophies, if you're missing the show off and whoa trophies, that's how you get them. By going back in and doing that triple spin move on an enemy, you'll get the show off and the row trophies. So that is today's Pota Rota's player pro tip of the day.
Oh, yeah.
There you have it. You know, that is not something that I'll go back in and do. But it just kind of goes to show you like how some people will not only want to 100% the game inside the game for whatever you need to achieve inside the game, but also outside the game with achievements and trophies and stuff like that. I'm just giving you an example of how that can work if you're a true 100% completionist and you need to truly 100% Crash Bandicoot for both the game and your achievement trophies. That's just an example of what you would have to do. All right, that's it. Beer's gone. Episode's over. We're all done. And that's going to do it for today. I want to thank everybody for joining me on this ride of the top seven games of 2021 so far. We'll do this again in about another 6 months at the beginning of 2022 and let you know overall what my top games were of 2021, top seven. So that's going to do it. I would appreciate you guys if you could rate my podcast. That'd be fantastic. I want to start seeing some ratings now that we're a few episodes deep. That would be great. Also, if you need to find out where else Potation Rotation is, just go to potationrotation.com. You'll find the links to the YouTube content there, the links to my social media accounts. Follow me, subscribe, whatever you guys got to do on those. And also, the podcast is available there as well on the homepage. It's just a central hub for everything. Everything you need is right there. It's right there. Just bookmark potationrotation.com. 3 episodes on YouTube a week. Of course, this podcast twice a month, the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. Podcast is also on the YouTube channel. I can keep going. This is a media juggernaut here. In the meantime, that's going to be it. I appreciate everybody for coming. I got to hop on out of here. I got things to do. I'll see you guys next time. Later.